holler at you, player. This is Teddy Long, and this is Real Talk, reminding you that you are listening to the Gurick Report podcast, along with my man, Steve Gurick, and Frank B. Holla, 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 player.
You know it's the Mac Militant.
Coming to get it on. Get out of my way, I'm coming with thunder and lightning and striking. I'm inviting you all to the storm. Feel the pain that I try to contain. My heart is black with the blood in my veins, and I'm coming to get it on.
And your life break and smash and straight with bad. I can see the fear in your eyes every time that I pass. I'm intimidating the most and feared by many.
But don't tempt me.
I leave the place empty. You get me? I'm low down, pretty and shifty. I'm low down, people against me. Even the best be afraid, cause I broke it aggressively. Especially when they roll up and test me. Yo, so I'm a disciplined militant mind. Slash time, if you look for a style like mine, you can't find it. Call me the M to the ACK. I break rules if you wanna come and make my day. Now say,
hey, get out of my way. I'm coming to thunder and lightning and striking. I'm inviting you all to the storm. Feel the pain that I'm trying to contain. My heart is black as the blood in my veins, and I'm coming to get it in. Hey, get out of my way. I'm coming to thunder and lightning and striking. I'm inviting you all to the storm. Feel the pain that I'm trying to.
It is Monday, September the 22nd, 2014. I am Steve Gurick, along with Frank D. A special edition of the Gurick Report podcast, the podcast that tells it like it is. Because today we welcome a former referee, manager, former general manager of ECW and SmackDown, and someday a future WWE Hall of Famer. Today we welcome Teddy Long. How you doing today, Teddy?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thank you guys so much for having me, man. I'm doing great.
You know, Frank, we've been talking about Teddy for a long time. We both are really big fans of his career. You pitched the idea of a new Nation of Domination with Teddy as the mouthpiece. And we've also talked about Teddy going in the Hall of Fame. So I know you and I are just overwhelmed to have a very special guest, Mr. Long, with us today.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, working graveyard shift every night. All I can think about was we're going to be interviewing Teddy on Monday, real icon in the business. So I couldn't wait.
Since you've been released, what's been going on, and what are you currently up to these days?
Well, I'm just really getting a lot of rest. I've been staying in the gym, you know, every day, like 6 days out of the week. Got some weight off of me, got a lot of stress off of me. Brother, I had been on the road 20 years of my life, and I just didn't know exactly how bad I was burnt out. So I owe all this to God. I think he sent me home for a reason. I got a chance to come home and get myself together. So I feel absolutely great, and I don't miss one day of WWE.
Wow.
Can you talk about you being released? How did it come about? How did you find out about it? And what was your kind of reaction? I mean, you've been with the company for so long. I know they haven't done a lot with you in recent years, but how did you learn of your release? And what was kind of your mindset when you were let go?
Well, first of all, the way I learned it, I could see, you know, you could see the writing on the wall. You know, they weren't doing anything with me. And like I said, I talked to some of the writers every day and asked what was going on. They would tell me stuff like, well, you know, we bring your name up and that's all, you know, we never hear nothing back. So when they started telling me that, and I knew then, I said, well, this ain't going to be long. And then I kind of felt like Triple H may have felt that, you know, I'm a dinosaur now. Maybe I'm too old to be out there on the TV. So so with that, you know, in mind, it didn't bother me at all because I owe all my success to God and to Mr. McMahon. I had a 14-year run there. I'm not mad at anybody. I had a great time. Mr. McMahon took care of me. So, you know, when I got released, it didn't bother me whatsoever, man. You know what I mean? When somebody takes you have a job for 14 years, and 10 years of that 14, I believe I worked on top. You know, when I first went in, I was a referee, but after 10, and I worked on top ever since as a heel manager and then into the role of general manager. So, you know, I think that Vince took care of me, and I'm just happy that he did, and I'm proud of it, man. And like I said, I was just happy to come home. I knew I was going to get released. When you don't hear nothing, and then they finally took me off the road and they sent me home, then I knew then I never did hear nothing back from them. So I knew my contract was coming up, so I was just waiting on them to give me the call.
You know, Teddy, have you heard anything lately from WWE as far as coming back and doing anything for, say, the WWE Network or anything like that?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard anything from them. The last thing I heard is that somebody, I guess maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago on one of the SmackDown shows, I think Triple H, they said he come out and he was acting like he was me and making tag team matches, playing my music and doing the dance. So I don't know what that's all about. Then I also heard that this past Monday on Raw, that on September 15th, which is my birthday, they wished me a happy birthday. So, you know, I just, if they're still thinking about me, I appreciate that. You know, they didn't say nothing bad about me, nothing in a negative way. So I thank them for that. And like I said, I just haven't heard anything from them, and it doesn't faze me anymore, because I feel, you know, within myself that I'll probably never go back there.
A belated happy birthday from the Gerwick Report podcast as well.
Hey, thank you guys very much, man.
Yeah, definitely. What's your thoughts on the WWE Network in general? Obviously, they're pushing this very heavily, you know, $9.99, and a lot of great content is there. Yet, for the core audience, I think there's still some shows missing. Just overall, what's your opinion of the network right now?
Well, I think that that's a good thing that they've done. You know what I mean? You know, there are a lot of wrestling fans out there, and there are a lot of people that I know would probably, you know, could sit around and be able to watch that all day, you know, for 24 hours a day. But, you know, I think it's doing all right. It may take a little while for it to kind of kick off and maybe they to achieve the success that they're trying to achieve. But like I said, I don't really watch, you know, much TV. I don't watch a lot of the shows now, you know, because on Mondays I'm doing some stuff on Mondays. I'm going to these acting classes. I don't know why the guy wants me to come there to acting classes. I've been acting for 30 years. but anyway, I'm doing that on Mondays. I'm doing that. I'm talking to some people. A talent agency is talking to me about doing some voiceovers and stuff. You know, easy stuff. What I'm doing now is a lot of the autograph signings. A lot of guys are calling me to come and do their independent shows, like be general manager for the night. So I'm enjoying doing that, and I'm enjoying helping the smaller operations. You know, if I can help them to kind of succeed, if I can get with some of those green guys and give them some of the knowledge that I've learned over the 30 years, then I'm willing to do that. I just want to help whoever I can and, you know, see them succeed and make it as far as I made it.
You know, Teddy, when I first saw you, it was in the WCW. And, you know, before you were a manager for Ron Simmons and Doom and the Skyscrapers and all that, you were a referee on TV.
Yes.
And I know your history there of working at the studios and setting up the ring and all that stuff. But, you know, I saw the Legends of Wrestling broadcast with you, and it was the Legends of Wrestling Soul. And you made some comments there about Ole Anderson and how Ole Anderson treated you when you were referee some of the matches there. I just kind of wanted to ask you about, you know, I've heard some stories about race relations at WCW back in the day, but what did you experience there in WCW as far as being a black man in the good old boy organization?
Well, you know, I experienced a lot of, well, not a whole lot, but I did have some racism going on there. You know, Ole Anderson, you know, like I said, he wasn't just about being racist against blacks. He was just, he didn't like his race either. He didn't like anybody. But with the experience that I got with him, Ole, you know, if he knew your name, he still wouldn't call you by your name. He would, you know, call you the N-word. So I know one time I was in a ring with him, refereeing, and so he was in the corner, and I tapped him on the back to ask him, you know, to get out of the corner, and he looked around and told me, Ian, don't put your hands on me. So, you know, that kind of frightened me. I mean, I didn't know what was going on. I'm just trying to do my job, and for me to experience something like that, it scared me to death. And then I had another bad experience with superstar Bill Dundee. He was in Elberton, Georgia one night. I was refereeing. And I don't remember what happened, but I know just all of a sudden, you know, Bill Dundee just yelled out, you know, nigga, don't you see what's going on? But he yelled it out real loud, you know, and all the people, you know, there were a lot of people there, and the white people, you know, back then, they, you know, they were stunned. They didn't laugh about it, you know, they just couldn't believe that. But some of them could, but a lot of people there just couldn't believe that he would yell out something like that. So, you know, I had my share of stuff. You know, I remember having a talk with Jim Herd one time about the, you know, my status and what was going on with me there. And at the time, I think Ric Flair was he was the booker there. And so Jim Herd came to me and told me right to my face, you know, he said, well, Ric Flair doesn't like you. So that's the bottom line. And that was the time that me and Undertaker went in and talked to him. And Undertaker was ready to go. I think Ole Anderson had told the Undertaker that he would never draw a dime. He had red hair. He wouldn't make a dime that he offered him a real low amount of money. So after that, me and Taker went in. Taker talked to Jim Herd. I guess Jim Herd didn't want to do anything about what Ole's decision was. So Taker left and went straight to Vince. And I just stayed there and, you know, found it and just kept continuing putting up with the mess.
Is racism still prevalent today, Teddy? You've been in the business a long time. Has it gotten better, gotten worse, or how would summarize it right now?
Well, I think I would summarize it. I think it has gotten better. I really found out, you know, I mean, it's still going on. It's going on everywhere. So, you know, it ain't just professional wrestling. But like I said, I think it's gotten better because when I went to Vince, you know, I realized that, you know, this man is about the money, about the dollar. He doesn't care if you're green, blue, red, yellow, black, whatever your color is. If you can make him a dollar, he's going to use you. So, you know, and I had, you know, to experience that at first hand, you know what I mean? I had no idea I would have went as far as I went, especially of being general manager, running both of Vince's shows. I mean, I didn't have the opportunity to run Raw, but maybe one night or two nights or something, but I did it. It did happen. So, like I said, I think it's gotten better because in the WWE, you know, if you can make a dollar, you know, they're going to use your whatever your color is now. I can't say how people have their personal feelings. There's a lot of personal feelings involved, you know, with some people against other people, you know, and nothing you can do about that. That's just how they feel. But I would have to say in the WWE, I think it's gotten better.
Well, let me ask you this question, Mr. Wong. Back in the WCW, Ron Simmons became the first African-American World Heavyweight Champion of a national promotion. And you were there and you were part of that. Do you know the circumstances of how that came to be? Since at the time, Ole Anderson was there, and obviously you had problems with Ole Anderson. And now I'm hearing that Ric Flair didn't like you either. What's the heat there with Flair? Why doesn't Flair...
I have no idea what the heat was there. All I know is that when I broke in, you know, I broke in under Kevin Sullivan and Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, God rest his soul. I used to ride with these two guys. And the way I got discovered is when I was refereeing, I started riding with them. And when I would ride with them, I told them about my background, about me being a disc jockey on a radio station, you know, when I was younger as a kid. And so they would say to me, you know, what DJ for? So we'd get a 12-pack of beer, you know, and we'd all get to drinking, and we'd ride into the next town. So once, you know, I'd start turning the radio down, and I'd start DJing for them. So then they found out I could talk. And so it was Kevin and Eddie Gilbert's idea to make me a manager because they knew that's what, you know, would have to be as a guy that could talk. I had no idea, you know. I didn't have a clue about it. So they went to Ric Flair, and they asked, he was running the place then, and they gave him the idea of me becoming a manager. Well, they came back and told me that Ric Flair hated it. Okay, he hated it. He didn't want to do it. He didn't want no part of it. Now, how it happened, I don't know. I think they convinced him. Maybe Jim Ross may have had something to do with it, too, of course, convincing him to use me. I don't know about that either. But I don't, like I said, I don't know how it happened. All I know is that finally they put me in that role, and I started managing. So then after I started managing, doing good there, then they took, let's see, who did I have? I think I had Norman the Lunatic, maybe, may have been the first guy that I started managing, and that was Mike Shaw, which is deceased now, too. So I came out with him, and then I had Ice Train and Scott Norton, I believe, what his name was, Fire and Ice or something.
Yep,
I think
yep.
I managed those two guys. So after I got out there and started talking, you know, and I never will forget, I remember Gordon Soley come up to me and told me one time, he said, Teddy Long, he said, you're a wrestling's best kept secret because they didn't give me, you know, what I guess I should have been getting. I mean, maybe these guys knew, I didn't know. But eventually, you know, with woman, Kevin's wife, Nancy, she was managing them when they had the hoods on. And so finally, they wanted a black team and they took the masks off of them and they gave them to me. Now, one time, Mr. Barnett, God rest his soul, too, he's dead. Now, he came to me and told me, he said, Teddy Long, he said, the reason that we put the belt on you guys is because the NAACP had been calling PBS or whatever, wanting to know why there were no black champions. And he told me that's why they done that.
Oh, wow. So it wasn't really, I hate to say it like this, but it wasn't about talent. Is more of a political move.
No, and then after we, you know, and then after we got together and we did all this stuff, you know, with Blair and the limousine, where I was shoving him around and took him over to this neighborhood and Butch and Ross beat him up. I mean, that was good stuff, man. People were liking that. Well, after Doom started getting over as heels, the people started cheering for us. You know, I remember one time I did an interview somewhere, and the lady said to me, she said, "I don't like Doom, but I love Teddy Long."
Right. Yeah.
I don't understand. How can you like the team and you know, don't like the team and like the manager? So, you know, I never did understand that, but as the years went by, I understood. So, you know, we did that and we got started getting over. So when the people started cheering us and we started like becoming a babyface before we even turned, then they put a block to that. They didn't want that. They didn't want us being a babyface team. They didn't want the people cheering for us. It was like, you know, you don't cheer for the black guy. They're all heels. If you notice, back in the day, they had maybe one babyface guy. Might have been, and that was Tony Atlas. And they gave him the opportunity to be that babyface guy, but he blew it because, I mean, this is stuff that he's talking to me about. He told me, you know, it was just, he just didn't have, you know, he just thought they needed him and he didn't need them. So that was his deal. So sometimes when you're a black guy in this sport and the business give you the opportunity to get out there and do something, and when you get out there and mess up, then it hurts not only yourself, it hurts the other black athletes, because what they say in this business is, see what I tell you, I told you about them black guys, see, if you put them out there and give them all this, that's what to do. So that's why I made sure is that when I got in my spot, when Vince gave me that opportunity, I made sure that I wouldn't mess up. I wasn't going to do nothing because I wanted to prove to this man that I appreciate you giving me the opportunity and I would not let you down. And all this stuff that you have heard about me and people saying no talent, I ain't this and that, I'm going to prove everybody wrong. And that's what I did.
Has your relationship with Ric Flair improved over the years?
Oh, yeah, I talked to him. You know, I'll never forget, you know, somebody that called me the N-word. I can't forget that, and especially at the time, you know, when I was, when I'm trying to feed my family just like you. You know what I mean? And so, you know, to come up to try to get rid of me, to fire me, stop me from feeding my family, what did I ever do to you? You know, I want to live good, too. I want to live the American dream. So, I mean, like I said, I talk to him, I speak to him, but that's it, but I'll never forget that.
Teddy, you were one of the best wrestling managers, you know, going back to the day you had, you know, you were talking about all the great talent that you managed, including Doom, which was a great tag team. And, you know, today in 2014, there really isn't wrestling managers anymore. This is something Frank D and I talk about all the time here on the podcast is, you know, where are the wrestling managers? There were so many good ones, Bobby the Brain, Jimmy Hart, etc. We've seen the decline of the role of a manager in today's professional wrestling game. Do you ever see that changing, and why do you think why do you think that happened, where we really don't really have wrestling managers anymore?
Well, I don't know. I did hear, you know, while I was with my time in the WWE, that they wanted to phase the managers out. They weren't going to have them anymore. And then I did hear that they were going to start bringing them back. So maybe that's why I believe they brought Dutch in. Maybe start the managing back. Then they brought Paulie Dangerously back. You know, he started managing, but there was no role for me. So, you know, I can't tell you what the problem was there. But, you know, I think that the managers are always needed, especially if there's a guy that can talk and can deliver and a guy that can get his wrestler over. I think that's very much needed because Butch and Ron, when they were doomed, they were just tough. I mean, these guys were tough. And for me to get out there and rant and rave about just how tough they were and what they were going to do, and then when I said that they were going to beat you up, that's what they did. They beat you up. So that's where the heat is. So I think that managers are going to always be needed.
And where did the moniker Peanut Head come from? Who started that?
Jim Cornette started that. We worked with him back in the day, and he started the Peanut Head stuff. To be honest with you, when I was a kid, little boy, that was my nickname, Peanut. And so it was amazing. I'm like, how could he just come up with this? But I think it was maybe about the shape of my head, because I remember we did some deal where some guy took a picture of my head and had nothing but the head showing and had surrounded by peanuts around on this picture. But I didn't have that picture. But I think it might have been the shape of my head. So, but Jimmy Cornette started that, and we rolled with it.
You know, Teddy, I have to say that looking at you in WCW, going from, you know, managing Ron Simmons, first Black World Champion, as we have established here. And then in around 1995, 96, I saw you managing Craig Pittman and Bobby Wall.
And it's well, I remember Craig Pittman. He was a nice guy. I thought about him just the other day. I was at this past Saturday. I was in New Jersey at the Legends of the Ring, and I saw Sonny Ono there.
Okay.
And that reminded me of Craig Pittman, because when I was managing Craig Pittman, Sonny Ono was there, and he had this car lot. He was selling cars, and Craig Pittman bought a car from him. And then we come to find out, you know, that what type of a guy he was. He never did pay Craig, never did pay Sonny Ono for the car. They had to repossess that. Then I turned him on to a guy that I was, who I bought cars from. I had a good guy that sold me cars. And I turned him on to my guy, and he didn't pay that guy. So we had to repossess that car. So he was just, you know, we started finding out real bad things about him. So I don't really know whatever happened to him, but I did hear that the reason they took me away from him, they didn't want me with him. They put him on his own. That Blair didn't want me to be managing. He didn't need me. And that was the same thing happened with Mark Merrill. Mark Merrill finally told me, got to be bad when that was split up, that they came to him and told him he didn't need me.
I don't know, man. It's just, I mean, what you're saying right now is just kind of like, it's making me wonder about, you look at this company, WCW, and it's a company that was at the time owned by Turner, and for this type of stuff to be going down, and then, you know.
Well. Well, they knew, you know what I mean? They knew about some of this stuff, you know, whether they, you know, they refused to do anything about it. We even had a show one time in the Atlanta Army. And on that show that night, there were no black wrestlers, period. No black stars at all. And we couldn't understand that. Why would you do that? We're Atlanta, Georgia. There's a black mayor, black police chief, everything, and you don't have not one black star on the card. And we would want to try to go to Hank Aaron. We wanted to talk to him about it because we knew he was a friend of Ted Turner's, you know, and we figured if we could talk to Hank, maybe Hank could get to Ted and let Ted know what was going on, but Hank would never talk to us. So, you know, we just, that part of it, we just didn't understand.
You know, Teddy, you were talking a little bit about Mean Mark, who, of course, became the Undertaker, and the story that, you know, he had red hair and they told him he was never going to draw. Obviously, you couldn't really envision him going on being the phenomenon that he became in the WWF as Undertaker. But could you see signs early in his career that this guy, you know, he was big, he could move, he could bump? Did you kind of see signs early in his career that he was going to go on to be something special in this business?
Well, of course I did, but I thought, you know, and it would, you know, I never did think about him maybe going to Vince, because I think back then, you know, the WWF was taboo. You know what I mean? So he wouldn't even think about that way, you know. So I never even dreamed that he would go to WWF and be the big star that he was. But I thought that they would be more with him in WCW, because when I managed him, you know, we had a, you know, good little decent run. Paulie Dangerously had him, you know, and the guy could do stuff. He was trained by Don Jardine. You know what I mean? Some of these people just don't get it. They just don't get it, or maybe they do get it, and maybe they just, you know, going to have it their way and do their own thing. But like I said, I could see him being something, you know, way back then. And I was happy to manage him, man. It was great for me.
When you were at WCW in the early 90s there, Hulk Hogan came over to WCW. And you talk about how it went from, you know, pretty much you had the good old boy philosophy down at WCW, and all of a sudden the big titan from New York, Hulk Hogan, comes in. Did things change for the better down at WCW?
Well, I don't know, because I wasn't there then. See, they sent me home from WCW, you know, and just told me they didn't have nothing for me.
Okay.
So they just sent me home, and they were just sending me a check every week. So I was told by Pee Wee Anderson, which is deceased now, the referee, you know, and he never did tell me, but he never did tell me who it was, but he told me, he said, hey, man, so you're going to have a problem here, he said, because I just heard that they don't want that nigger Teddy Long on their TV. So that from then in, I went on home, and I stayed at home, and then Bill Watts came in, and which I thought I was going to do something then, but didn't do anything there. I was working with Eric Bischoff at the time, and I don't think Watts was a big fan of Eric Bischoff. So they used to pile a lot of work up on Eric. You know, they would make him do all this stuff, which he had to stay, like, after, you know, overnights and stuff, you know, taping voiceovers. We do do stuff for the other networks. And so Eric just was bogged down with work, and I would stay there with him, you know, until maybe 9 or 10 o'clock at night to help him so he could get through with his work. And so I think Eric remembered that. And when he finally took over, you know what I mean, he went to give me the opportunity and was going to give me a break to roll and give me a push. And then I think Flair got to Eric, and then that cut that off. So that what happened then, I just went home doing that NWA thing. I wasn't even nowhere around. So I don't know whether it changed for the better or not. But they did start making money, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden when NWA with Cole, you know, they didn't know nothing else to do. They had no ideas, and they didn't know what are we going to follow NWO with. So that's when it started going down. They just didn't know what to do after NWO.
You know, they had you at the time managing, as you mentioned earlier, you were managing Fire and Ice, and you were managing Jim Powers, and it's just, and the thing that trips me out still to this day, and, you know, you can find a lot of this stuff on YouTube, is that they had you relegated to worldwide wrestling tapings at the Disney MGM Studios, or you'd be relegated to the other show, Saturday Night, WWE Saturday Night. But they never, I mean, I could remember maybe seeing you on Nitro maybe once or twice. You know, I saw you come out there on Nitro. You came out there with one of the angles when the night they thought Sting had joined the NWO, and you came out there and got Luger, or Macho Man or somebody. You came out there, and we saw you there. But we never really saw you anymore until you came to the WWF, and then you came in as a referee. So how was that transition from going over from WCW to the WWF?
Well, that was good for me because one thing I always remember, when Bobby Heenan and Dean Oakland came over to WCW, I remember talking to Bobby. Me and him talked a long time, and Bobby Heenan told me to my face, he said, "Man, if Vince McMahon knew you, he would blow you up," because Bobby knew I could talk. He said, "Vince had you there, if he knew you, he would blow you up." And so my thing was, I came home from, you know, WCW, and I was at home with my wife, and I used to tell my wife that. I would tell her, I said, "You know, Bobby told me, he said, if I ever go to Vince, you know, if he found out what I could do, he would blow me up." So when the opportunity came for me to go to Vince, you know, to go to work for him, you know, they told me I was coming in, but they were going to bring me in as a referee. Didn't bother me at all, you know. I treasure refereeing, because if I'd have never become a referee, I'd never be where I am today.
Right.
So I went to Vince as a referee, and all my thing was, let me just get there. If I can get there and there's some way that I can let this man know what I could do, then I think I'll be all right. But when I did get there and I went to refereeing, I don't know what happened there. This is rumors that I heard that, you know, they was mad at me there and they wanted to get me out of the spot. They wanted to get me away from there. They didn't want me there. So they had a guy, Tess, told me this. God rest his soul. They had him to lay down and not kick out. So I referee one of his matches and he didn't kick out on me. So I counted three. You have to count three. So then they blamed it on me, saying that I'm counting the guys out. So then they sent me home then because they said Vince was mad because I was counting guys out or something. So I came home, and then finally one day they called me, and I think Sergeant Slaughter is what I heard. It was Sergeant Slaughter, Earl Hebner, and Michael Hayes. They was in this meeting, and they were in the meeting, and they were talking about, you know, managers and bringing somebody in that could talk. And Sergeant Slaughter, now I wasn't there, I'm just saying what I heard, that he brought my name up, and also Michael Hayes brought my name up. And Vince said, "Well, then let's get him up here." And so they called me about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, told me to catch a flight. I caught a flight, and I had $1 in my pocket. Well, no, I think I had $4. And I caught the plane, and I went to Providence, Rhode Island, and they picked me up. I went to Boston. They picked me up in Boston, and they drove me to Providence, and I walked out that night with D'Lo Brown. And that's when it all happened. I came back after I did the promo with D'Lo Brown and Tommy Dreamer. I came back, and Vince McMahon stood up and gave me a standing ovation. And he said to me, he said, "My God, I didn't know I had you right here under my nose all this time." And that's how I started. We've been going ever since.
Yeah, I remember that. Down with the Brown. I remember that.
Yeah. So I started managing him, and then I was just so strong out there until we come back to the gorilla. And this said to D-Lo, he said, D-Lo, he said, I'm just going to kiss you right now. He said, you don't have a black bone in your body. So I don't think he was happy with D-Lo with me. So that's when the next thing I knew, then D-Lo started requesting all this money like he was this big superstar. So he screwed it up for him, not for me. And so that's how he was released. They had me and Rodney Mack taken, throw him in the trunk of a car, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, but then you had a stable, if I remember correctly, you had a stable with Rodney Mack, Jazz, and Christopher Nowinski.
Yeah, and also, you know, we had Mark Henry. Mark Henry was in there, too.
Oh, I remember that. You guys were doing some stuff there with Mark Henry and Goldberg at the time.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And then they,
Mark Henry and Rodney Mack were a tag, too. You know, I had them for a minute.
Yeah, I remember that. And they actually tested you. They kind of tested you as we were speaking offline. I remember the Monday Night Raw in Memphis with Jerry Lawler. And they tested you that night. It was the first time we'd ever kind of seen you in the GM role. And that right there will go down as probably one of the last Raws, in my opinion, that had that kind of edgy content going on there. Because it was kind of like, it was like, we hadn't seen something like this before in years, and you pulled it off very, very good.
Right, and then at that particular time, a lot of that stuff I did, I just was able to pull it off on my own because I didn't have a clue about some of the stuff I was doing. I learned so much when I went to work for Vince. I learned what the business was really all about. Because when I was in WCW and NWA, nobody told me nothing. You had to learn everything on your own. I didn't know I was supposed to draw money. Oh, I didn't know I had to be to be green, to be the guy, to stay there. I didn't have no idea about none of that. I thought I was just walking out on TV doing something. So, but I went to Vince and I learned a lot there, and I really understood what the business was all about. He really educated me on the business.
When WWE brought back ECW, it was, of course, their version of ECW. Got kind of mixed reviews. Some people thought, what a crazy idea to revive the old ECW, and then it was... Well, it's never going to be hardcore. It's never going to be like Paul Heyman's ECW. What went through your mind when they revived ECW, and what did you think of becoming the general manager there?
Well, I thought it was a good idea to do what they did. I mean, the more shows, the more money. I just think that if they had let it, remain as the way ECW was originally done, I think it would have been a lot better. But, with Vince, we got kids watching, we got a lot of other people, so you have to watch, exactly what you do on that TV. So they kind of toned it down. So that probably maybe phased it out a little bit once it got toned down because people weren't seeing what they were seeing with the original ECW. Now, when we first got it, it was good because we had all these hardcore matches. You know how we did them? We had Crash Holly, blah, blah. We had all these guys doing all these hardcore matches out in the streets. I mean, we did one in Albany, New York one night, man. They were fighting in the middle of the street, So that's what people, they enjoyed. That's what they wanted to see because that was real. So, once they got away from that, then I think that's when it kind of phased out. Now, I enjoyed going over there because it bothered me. Wherever Vince wanted me to go and do my thing, that's where I wanted, that's what I would do. And then I heard the rumor that, he wasn't too happy with, I'm trying to remember who he was. Who was Madison? He had Humana, what was his name? The Spanish kid? God, I can't think of his name, man. He had Humana. And then he went to manage ECW for a while.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. You're talking about, what's that guy's name?
I know exactly what you're talking about. So he went to manage.
The Cuban guy.
Yeah. The rumor was that Vince didn't like him too good, So he didn't like how he talked or something. But anyway, like I said, one day I wasn't doing anything then. Vince called me to the side and he told me, he said, I got to get you back in the mix. He said, God damn it, I got to get you back out there. So then the next thing I know, that they had me coming out on ECW as being the general manager there. Then they put this girl in there, Tiffany, and I thought that somebody, whoever put her in there, I think which may have been Laura Niner, they thought that she was going to be able to take my spot there. They were really grooming her to do that. But after they saw that she couldn't do it, then I didn't have no problem there. I stayed there until Vince was ready to put me back on SmackDown.
Right. The guy you're talking about, Armando Alejandro Estrada.
Armando Estrada, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. I couldn't remember him for nothing.
That's right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that, man. They put you on ECW, and they had the Tiffany girl there, and I'm just like, why is Teddy Long kind of like, why they got this girl being a sidekick here? You know, that's kind of how I saw it.
Well, they were trying to fade certain people then, were trying to fade me out then, so I did find that out.
Hey, Teddy, what'd you think of WWE when they ended the brand extension? Because, you know, for a long time, we could watch, you know, your show, SmackDown, as you were the general manager, and see different talent, and then they just kind of phased out the brand extension, and now it's SmackDown's kind of a Raw light. Your thoughts on them, you know, kind of ending the brand extension?
Well, I think they didn't intend to, in my opinion, I don't think they intended to end the brand. I think that since, you know, we don't, you know, they don't have the talent that we used to have. You know, we were able, you know, well, at one time when they were doing the trades, okay, we had enough talent that we could send SmackDown guys over to Raw because they hadn't been seen on Raw. They were just seen on SmackDown. We were able to do that. But now they don't have the talent, you know, to do that same thing with. So in order to be able to feature SmackDown, you got to have Raw guys to go over to SmackDown, you know, so they can be able to make that show go. So I think if they had the talent to do what they did, you know what I mean, I think it would be okay. Right now, I just don't think we got the talent, and it's not we because I'm not with them anymore. But anyway, I don't think they have the talent to do what they did then, you know what I mean? It's a few number of guys, and so in order to make that show, you got to send these guys to SmackDown in order to be able to have a TV show there.
You know, along the same lines, Teddy, they expanded Raw to 3 hours a couple of years ago, and you know, it was at a time when the show's not very strong. It's not hot. It's not popular. As you said, the talent's not there. That one time they had, they don't have the deep roster they had years ago.
Right.
And some would say that's really overexposing their product. They have a lot of guys who are not over. A lot of green guys on WWE. What was your thoughts on Vince expanding Raw to 3 hours?
Well, let me tell you something. Sometimes Vince does things, you know what I mean, to see if they work. You know what I mean? I think he thinks them over and decides what he's going to do. And, you know, there are a lot of people that say to Vince, you know, hey, I wouldn't do this, but you know, I don't think this is going to work. Well, that's the worst thing you can tell him. You know, if you tell him something ain't going to work, he's going to make sure that it does. So I think when he went to 3 hours, you know what I mean, he took a gamble. Everything's a gamble. You know, that's like he did with the XFL when they had that football team, you know. So you gamble, you either win or lose. So you have to take that chance. So I think Vince took a gamble on moving Raw to 3 hours. And like I said, it worked. They're doing, you know, I feel like they're doing okay. I don't know about how ratings are doing or any of that, but they're able to pull this 3 hour show off with the talent that they got. So, you know, you have to give him, you know, take your hat off to him for that.
Well, you know, Teddy, one thing that I can't take my hat off to Vinnie Mac for is in, you know, March 2001. The company that we were, you know, talking about here, WCW, you know, closes doors, were bought by WWF at the time. What did you think about that when WWF finally conquered WCW?
Well, I thought it was really good at the time, you know what I mean? Now, you know, because I could see the writing on the wall where WCW, you knew that was going down. It wasn't just a matter of time. So when Vince was able to take it over, I think everybody, including myself, was happy about that. I was already over. I was already working for Vince at the time. But some of the other guys that came over were glad because it gave them somewhere to work. They, you know, they had a job. You know, it's like, you know, like what's happening now with the TNA thing, you know. These guys don't know what's going to happen with them. I think I heard at the Legends, I talked to one of the guys, I think they're shut down for the rest of the year. So these guys now got to look for work, you know. So I think when Vince bought, you know, WCW, it was great. Guys had somewhere to go. They had a, you know, guys had a job to go to. And that's what it's all about, man, having a job and being able to go somewhere to go to work.
I mean, yeah, but do you feel that, and this is, you know, from a fan's point of view,
okay,
from what I saw it, I just completely think that, you know, I understand the whole thing of having a place to work. But I also think that in hindsight, when you have this huge influx of talent coming over from WCW, the talent that he brought in, it's going to create a problem because there's only so many spots. So there's only going to be so many spots for guys to work. And I think that's the kind of the problem that we're having right now with like you just mentioned, TNA, is that WWE doesn't want a lot of the TNA guys because they have their own developmental down there with NXT, and they don't need them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, why would you do, you know, why would you take those guys? It's just like you said, you don't need them. But, you know, the thing is this, just being, you know, I think Vince, you know, with his deal, Vince, he's the king. He's going to be the man that controls it all. And it's pretty much like that way now, you know what I mean? There's no big organization, there's no big company but the WWE. So that's it. And so Vince controls it all, he owns it all, and I think he's happy with that. And they're gonna make that. They're gonna make things work. They got a lot of young talent in NXT. You know, you may have 100 guys down there. You might get 10 out of that 100, but those 10 out of that 100 may work for you. They may draw some money for you. So it's just a chance you got to take. And then I think basically with the new talent in NXT and guys like that, you know, they can. You know, they don't have to pay them as much money as they have to give a lot of guys. A lot of those guys down there are just glad to be getting a break and glad to be in the business. As they used to say back in the day, you just ought to be glad to be here. So I think it's going to be like that. So they're going to save a lot of money on some of the talent down there by, you know, not having to pay them all this big money. And some of those guys down there are going to work for them. They're going to be big stars.
Did you think overall, looking back at 2001, when WWE bought WCW and then they did the invasion angle, you know, it's a huge thing as far as fans go that WWE totally missed the boat with the invasion angle. This thing could have went on a lot longer than it did. And a lot of it is that people, you know, believe that WWE should have picked up some of the bigger contracts of the WCW talent because they would have got their return back. You were there at the time at WWF
right.
when these WCW guys were brought in, and then the WCW brand was so weak to the point where they had to bring ECW and merge these two groups together. I mean, looking back on it, do you think that was a successful venture by WWE? I mean, do you think that, I mean, you, like you said, Vince has to be the king. So do you think that ego got in the way of business?
Well, yeah, I can say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can say that, man. I mean, because, you know, you see that, you know, happening all the time, you know. Egos are just not only with Vince, they're with the talent, too. So they got that some of them egos are bigger than Vince's egos. So I think it, what he did, you know, he just wanted to, you know, to make, you know, and then, you know, him and Ted Turner had clashed in the past. So for him to be able to buy Turner's stuff and be the man, I think that was a big win for Vince.
Right. Yeah.
Is to put Turner out of business.
Right. But even though, I get that what you're saying, but in reality, Turner was already gone years ago. You know, after AOL merged with AOL merged with Time Warner, it's just dumb to me. You know, as a fan, to hear on DVDs, oh well, you know, we crushed Turner and we, you know, Turner was already gone. You beat nothing. That's how I look at it.
But see, me and you knew that Turner was already gone. Look at all the people that didn't know.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So that's how I got over. There's a lot of people around like me and you. They're not smart enough to figure this out. So the people that can't figure this out, look what it did to them, what an impact it had on them, and that's the audience they played to, not me and you.
Right.
You know, Teddy, a lot of people were kind of excited when Shane McMahon was in the company, and he was bumping, and he was very entertaining, and a lot of people thought that, you know, one day Shane McMahon would become the successor to Vince and that he would run the company. And now, of course, it's going to be Triple H and Stephanie. Can you kind of speak to what happened with Shane and why he really isn't there in the company anymore?
Well, I can't answer that for you because I really don't know. You know, the only thing I can say about that is, you know, we used to see Shane pretty regularly. He was always there, you know what I mean, and, you know, doing his thing. I love Shane, too. He's a great guy. But then all of a sudden, he just phased out. You know, he wasn't coming around anymore, so I never, you know what I mean, you know, question stuff like that, you know, so I never did know, you know, what the deal was. So I don't know what happened with Shane.
You know, Teddy, out of your whole career being in wrestling, it's like, what are your top five favorite things, top five favorite moments of all time?
Let's see. I guess number one would be to be able, you know, the first time to be able to make it to the WWF when it was that. Another big moment I had is, I guess, the night that I walked out to display my talent to Vince. That would be number two. That was a real big moment for me. Number three is the angle that I started doing, the whiteboard challenge. I really loved that. That was great. That was a big moment.
Yeah. Yep.
The other one was I did the thing with The Undertaker where Undertaker kidnapped me and I was in the coffin and all that stuff. That was great. I mean, it was funny to me to be laying in a coffin and I did. So that was a big moment. And to be able to pull that off, man, I pulled that off on my own because when I came back from that, man, everybody up there was standing, clapping and everything. So that was a real big moment for me. And another big moment was I think me and Dolph Ziggler and Vicky had did a deal where they had hurt me and they took me out and people didn't know where I was, didn't know when I was coming back. And then I came back and walked out in Sacramento, California that night and golly, what a big response. And those are my five big moments.
Yeah, I have to tell you though, looking back at your days there in WCW and all the tag teams that you managed there, was there any interest at all? I mean, I know what you're saying is that they didn't really want you managing anybody, but looking back on it, I thought you would have been a perfect fit for Harlem Heat.
They never did say anything to me about that. You know, I guess after I managed, you know, Butcher Ron Doom, I guess they didn't want me to, you know, put me with any other black team, but then they ended up putting Sherry Martel with them, and that's how I think I just got completely out of there. But they never did ask me anything about managing them.
You know, Teddy, you're such a great talker. Have they ever, over the years, have you ever been approached about being a TV commentator?
No, I haven't. I'll tell you what I was approached about. I was doing the video games we were doing, and I was doing my voiceovers on the video game. And this guy was real impressed with me doing the voiceovers. He told me, and this is a true story, he told me, he said, man, Samuel Jackson ain't got nothing on you. And he told me that, and he told me, he said, man, I'm going to do whatever I can to get you some of this voiceover work. He said, you are absolutely great. So I was approached by that, and that was no TV commentator, none of that. Well, you know, when you're on a contractor bench, you can't get approached by people to do nothing anyway because you can't do it. So that's why I'm so glad I'm free now, that there are a lot of things now that I can do, you know, that I wasn't able to do, and maybe I'll get a chance to live that dream.
Yeah, let me ask you a question about that, too. You just came to my head right now. Under contract to WWE, you're not allowed to do pretty much anything unless it's, you know, their say-so. But you're an independent contractor. How does that work exactly? I don't understand. I would think that if you're an independent contractor, you should be able to
do anything you want to do.
Yeah.
But, I don't understand that, and how they get away with that is unbelievable to me. I just don't know. I thought when you're – but it's like they, you know, there's a lot of things that you could do that you could make extra money, you know, but – I just don't know how that works. I can't tell you. Evidently, it's legal because nothing's ever been said about it. And they haven't got in trouble about it. So evidently, whatever they're doing, I guess they can do it.
Do you remember Sean O'Hare?
Yeah, I remember him.
And any thoughts? Of course, he just recently passed. You know, tragically, took his life. Tried to clean himself up. Any thoughts? Any memories of Sean O'Hare?
Well, I don't have any. You know, real memories of him because I didn't know him, you know, we wasn't like buddies or hang out or anything. I spoke to him, we talked, or, you know, just a few, you know, moments or so, and we'd go our separate way. So I don't have any vague memories of him, you know what I mean? All I can tell you is this, he was a nice guy. I got along with him, and it's just tragic to what happened to him, but you just don't ever know, man. You know, you got these demons, and sometimes if you can't control them, they'll get you, man, because I've seen these demons get a lot of guys.
I wanted to actually, Teddy, here, just a couple of names, and you just like word association, just what you think of these people. Vince McMahon.
Well, my overall opinion of Vince McMahon, I can't say anything bad about Vince McMahon. There are a lot of guys, you know, once they get released or they get fired, they go to saying Vince was an asshole and all that. You know what I mean? I can't say that. He was never an asshole to me. He never yelled at me. I never got a yell from him about anything. If I did something that he didn't maybe like or something that he thought I needed to correct, he would always call me over. He'd call me over to him, and he'd sit me down, and he'd talk to me like a human being, you know, and he'd tell me, hey, Teddy, you know, here's what I think you ought to did here. He got a little angry with me one time, and it was my fault, and I'll explain it to you. I came out one time in St. Louis, and I did the dark match, and I was introducing Randy Orton. And me and Randy are buddies. I've known Randy for a long time, you know. And so my thing was, when I walked out, you know, I went through this whole spiel about your hometown boy, the Viper, Randy, and I went through all these names, and so Vince called me back and told me, he said, it didn't take all that. You don't need all that. They already know he's a Viper. God damn it, they already know who he is. You know, it didn't take that. Just go out, make the dinner. And he was right. He was right, because that's what I was doing. I was just, I'm thinking in my head that Randy's my buddy. Let me get it. Let me just make his name, like, in life out here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I was doing, and he was exactly right about that. You know, I forgot about business and went to being personal.
Triple H.
I don't know really. You know, we talk and speak and stuff. You know, we never just sit down. You know, really had no conversation either. You know, but like I said, he's always, you know, treated me nice and spoke and talked to me, and that's basically all I can say about him.
All right, here's a name for you. Let's see what you say about this guy, if you have any interaction with him. Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, Hogan's a big guy. I met him earlier back in the day. Him and Kevin Sullivan were good buddies. And Kevin introduced me to him, and I had a chance to meet him then. So I got along with him, you know, and everything. He was all right with me. He kind of helped me out in WCW a little bit. And then I don't know what happened there. But anyway, like I said, I think he's a nice guy. He's always treated me nice.
Okay, one more guy here, and this guy is deceased, but he was one of my favorites of all time. Any interaction at all with Macho Man Randy Savage?
Macho Man Randy Savage, yes, man. I'll give you this story. I guess we can tell this. I'll give you this story. Way back in the day, it was NWA then. Okay, Randy was not the Macho Man then. He was just Randy Savage. So Randy Savage and Dick Slater were together, okay? So they came in Atlanta. We was taping at the old TBS studios. Okay, back in the day, Gordon Soley was around and everything. So Randy and Slater wanted some weed. So they knew I was the local guy. You know, I lived in Atlanta. You know, they came to me and asked me about it because I was hanging around the TV station. So I said, okay, no problem. So I took Randy, and Dick Slater. We went over to the West End, is what they called it, and we went over to get some weed. So we meet this guy. And we get in the car with this guy. And so when we get in the car, I think Slater, Randy's sitting in the front, and Slater's sitting in the back behind the guy. So when we get in the car to get the weed from the guy pulls out another bag, and he says to us, he says, hey, look, man, he says, I got everything. I got the coke, too. So he has this big bag of coke and this big bag of weed. So next thing I know, I look around, and I see Randy turn around, and he looks at Dick. Randy was in the back, that's right, and Slater was in the front. So Randy turns around, looks at Dick, Slater turns around and looks at Randy. And the next thing I know, Randy hooks this guy in the sleeper. He puts him in the chute sleeper. He puts this guy in the sleeper. We put this guy out, put him to sleep in his car, left him and took all of his throats.
Oh, man. Stack mode.
What a story. I was right there.
Oh, yeah.
So Randy was a great guy, man. I love Randy, man. And I had a chance to see Randy, you know, after that. You know, I met him and I told him, I said, Randy, you remember this, sir? And he just died. And he had me go around the locker room and tell that to everybody.
Wow.
The million-dollar question that everybody has is, why isn't Randy Savage in the WWE Hall of Fame? Do you have anything to add to that?
Well, no, I don't know, you know, because, you know, you never know who they're going to put in the Hall of Fame, you know. You just have to wait and see, you know. I'm pretty sure Randy will be inducted. There's no way they can continue to have a Hall of Fame and not put in the Macho Man. Jesus Christ, he's a bigger track than his Hogan was in the WWE.
Yep.
Amen to that.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Teddy. If you were to go into the WWE Hall of Fame, who would you want to induct you?
Vince McMahon.
Yeah, because
he can talk about me better than anybody, because he discovered me after all those years.
Hey, Teddy, have you ever seen TNA Wrestling, and would you ever consider working for them?
Yeah, I've seen it. I look at the shows sometime. Yeah, I consider working for them. You know, I consider working anywhere as long as there's a check. That's what it's all about. But yep. You know, they need some help down there too, and I'd like to be able to help them. I want to be on that end of the game now, you know, trying to help people with the knowledge that, you know, I've been able to obtain. So, you know, yeah, I consider working for them in a heartbeat.
How about another one? Jeff Jarrett started a new group up called Global Force Wrestling. Have you heard from them, and would you consider working for Jeff Jarrett?
Well, I talked to Jeff Jarrett. maybe 8 months ago when he first started talking about this thing. You know, me and him, he called me and we had a conversation. I talked to him. I happened to see him at the Legend of the Ring this past weekend up in Jersey. I had a chance to talk to him there, and he told me that my name was number one on his list. So we're just going to see what happens there, you know what I mean? So like I said, I don't want a whole lot now. You know, I've made it in this business. I've been successful. I can go as high as you can go. You know, I've ran both of the business shows. It's not like I'm a wrestler. I didn't have to worry about trying to be world champion. But I did run both of the shows. And, I mean, to be able to be in charge of both of these television shows that, you know, that business, you know, created, you know, was a big deal to me. So I can't go no higher than that. So basically what I want now, you know, I'll work for somebody if they want me. But I just want a limited role. You know, I'll go in, I'll be GM, but I'm not going to go through all this traveling like I used to do back in, you know, with Vince and all that. It's just too much. I don't want any more of that. But if I can come in and do some TV stuff and do some live events every now and then, you know, I don't mind doing that. But I just don't want that big schedule that I had, you know, when I was working there.
Well, TNA would be perfect because they tape, what, 3 or 4 shows in one night? So you could be, you know, do one show and you're on the – you're on TV for the next 3 or 4 weeks. That'd be awesome.
Well, all that may change. You know what I mean? I guess if they get a, you know, I don't know whether they've got a network or yet that they're going to be on for next year, but I think they were just taping all those shows. From what I heard, that they taped all those shows because they only had their contract up until the end of the year, so they didn't know where they were going to go, you know, after that deal was up with TNA. So they just taped all their TVs up until they, you know, find a deal or somebody or find what, you know, where they're going to go. So I think once they do get a deal, and I hope they do, and I think they will. I mean, you know, they're not that bad. You know, I think somebody will pick them up. It's bad writing there. You know what I mean? I think they just got to change, you know, some of that behind-the-scenes staff, you know, and get some people in there that really care. There were a lot of people down there that I know that knew the business and knew better than the way that they were doing things. And why they didn't tell them, you know, I don't understand. So, like I said, you know, I consider them, you know, but we'll just see what happens with them at the first of the year. We'll just see what happens. If not, I'll just take it easy. I'll do my autograph signings. I'll go make the independents and be GM for the night, go make some tag team matches player, and just do what I do.
At the end of the day, that's all it is. It's about the dollar bill.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how I do business. But
that's how we all do business.
Exactly. But I want to ask you, Teddy, do you think that maybe one day you'll be back in the WWE?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. And I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't know. But like I said, I don't think so.
I mean, do you think that you kind of got just kind of complacent in that role of being the GM for so long and they really never going anywhere as far as, like, they never really did anything with your character after a while. You just stayed there and you were just the GM and you were the Teddy Long that goes out there and dances with the fans. And, to me, watching as a fan, I thought, I can't wait to see Teddy go out there and heal it up. And, then, you know, they teased that a few years ago with you and Booker T. You know, there was something, there had some angle going on SmackDown. That's when the last time I watched SmackDown was when that angle was going on, and they just dropped it.
Well, what I was told then is that when they made Book GM, that they was going to have the feud between me and him where they were going to turn me heel, and I was going to start back to managing some guys. So my thing supposed to have been there is Book wouldn't listen to me. He wouldn't, you know, I would tell him how to do things and stuff, and he wouldn't listen to me. And so there's supposed to have been some jealousy between me and him. And they started to go on that way. But then I guess after they made up in their mind, because they know what they're going to do way before anybody else does. So I guess when they made up in their mind that they were going to release me anyway, so that's when they didn't go nowhere with it. So, but they were talking about doing that with me and Book. I was supposed to turn heel and then start managing some guys, and then I think I was supposed to get a couple of guys and beat him up. So, but like I said, I don't know what happened there. But like I said, I think, you know, in Triple H's eyesight, you know, I'm a dinosaur. I'm too old. So I think that's what he was basically depending on. He didn't, you know, maybe they didn't want me on his TV. I might have been too old to be on the TV.
Right. You're too old to be on the TV, but yet Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Comes out there, all of 250 years old, coming out there, still thinking he's styling and profiling. and the only thing he's found filed is bankrupt. So
exactly.
That's like I said, man. I'm not a fan of Flair at all, and that's just how it is. I'm just not a fan of Ric Flair. That's one of the guys that stayed too long.
You must have had your dealings with him somewhere in the past.
Oh, I never. No, you know what? I've had my dealings with Flair as just hearing stories about how Flair is.
Okay.
And that's
right.
I got you. And that's and one of the things that I always remember, I thought was funny as hell, is I've always remembered when Kevin Nash talked about working with Flair in WCW and how they knocked the skin loose on him, and that's exactly why he looks like he does today. I can't stand Flair. Just Flair just comes off to me as the biggest kiss ass I ever seen. You know, the guy was on here, you know, was doing these little shoot interviews years ago, and he was knocking everybody. He was, you know, oh, I'm so pro WWE. If you were so pro WWE, why didn't you go there during the Monday Night War? Number one,
right.
You had all these problems with Bischoff. You didn't go over to WWE, and all of a sudden now, oh my God, you know, he said in the interview, TNA, what is that? And all of a sudden you went down there taking the Carter's money. I mean, you talk about just hypocrites. I mean, I don't like Hogan, but I respect Hogan more than I do Flair. Flair is, like I said,
right.
A guy who stayed on too long. And then today, after all the stuff that you told me, and I know you're like me and Steve, you tell like it is straight up, you know, keep it 1,000.
Right.
I don't like Flair even more. Dick Flair is what I call him. It's like Shane Douglas.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I wasn't a big fan of his, that's for sure.
Well, right. I got to ask you. I got to ask you this. How did you come up with Playa and Hala? And when you came up with those, did you really think those would stick?
I'll do one at a time. The way I came up with Playa is that I was at home and I have this big Labrador Retriever, and I used to call every time I go talk to my dog. I start calling him Playa. Come on, Playa, let's go, Playa. You know, and just out of the blue, I just called him Playa. So put that to TV. And then, you know, it's kind of a slang, too, you know, that the hip-hop, you know, world uses, Player and Baby Girl and stuff like that. So, you know, when you get on TV, you know, you got to kind of be in the know. You got to be in what's going on out there, so, you know, to attract the audience. So I started saying Player by calling my dog that. The way I started doing my dance is my grandson, who now is 11 years old, he's about 2 years old, and he used to be in this little thing, a little walker. And he would get in this thing, and when he'd see me coming, he would just go to bopping up and down, you know, with both his hands out, just like that. And I just started doing the dance, and I used to tell my grandson, I said, watch this, I'm gonna do the dance for you on TV. So he already knew what was going on once he got older. But that's how I started doing the dance, and holla, 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 I just come up with that on my own.
Yeah, I mean, it's so synonymous with you, and it's so over. Did you have any idea, you know, when you started using that terminology, that it would get so over?
No, I had no idea. And once it started getting over, then that's when I took and I said, okay, well, let me start thinking of some more ideas and different ways to say holler, like at the end of some of my promos and maybe in the middle. You know, I started figuring out ways to, you know, put holler in and player and to use it, you know, at the right time. That's what you learn from Vince, too. You know, it's a lot of things you can say on TV, but sometimes you say them, it's not the right time to say them, so you need to know when, where the words fit, and I learned that from Vince, too.
Let me ask you this question, Teddy, and this is something that, you know, me and Steve were talking about before we contacted you this morning. You know, we've talked a lot today about race and wrestling, and I don't want to keep harping on it, but you know what, it is what it is. You know,
right. When
you look at the situation of the landscape of the wrestling business now, and I heard you earlier say, if Vince can make a dollar on you, that's what he's going to do. And for me,
one
of the things that I've been saying the past few months on this show is that I look at the WWE's product, and I don't see anybody that looks like me. I don't see anybody that, you know, they're not pushing wrestling to, you know, to African Americans. They're not pushing it to minorities. They were pushing it to the Latinos with Alberto Del Rio and Rey Mysterio. But where is the Ron Simmons of today? You know what I'm saying? We don't have it. And then Booker T is not there anymore. Booker T is just he's got his own deal going on, the Reality of Wrestling, which you're a part of as a GM. and then you have Booker T doing the panel. But then, you know, there is nobody. You know, they have Kofi Kingston there. You got Big E. You got Xavier Woods. But, you know, they had an angle with these guys that they were going to go with, and all of a sudden it got dropped in thin air. You know, they never did anything else with it. And I'm just saying, you know, I'm a guy. I'm Puerto Rican and black. I spend
right.
money on wrestling, too. Why is it that I don't
right.
see anybody like me being pushed on the TV? All I see is John Cena. All I see is Randy Orton. All I see is, you know, Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't see Kofi getting that push. Kofi should have been world champion, in my opinion, a long time ago. I hear people
right.
all the time,
well,
people harping on Dolph Ziggler. Okay, well, why don't we start harping on Kofi Kingston?
Right. Well, it's like this, man. You know what I mean? They got black talent there. They're just not doing anything with them. If you want to do something, make your Ron Simmons of the day, you got Big E there that looks phenomenal.
Yep.
I mean, looks phenomenal, and he's young. There's a lot of years you can get out of him. And I had the chance to meet him. Me and him were pretty cool, and he was a nice guy. Had a great attitude. I mean, he wouldn't no problem of doing whatever he was asked to do. So why wouldn't you do something with a guy like that? But maybe they think that, you know, his work is not up to par. Or maybe, you know, there's somebody somewhere that says, hey, this guy ain't going to draw us a dime. So, and somebody's listening to that. So that's the only thing I can tell you, man. I don't, you know, like I said, I don't know why they're not doing anything with the black guys there. You know, that's not, you know, I don't know whose call that is, but I don't even know how to answer that.
Because it really bothers me because we spend our money too on this
yeah.
product. You know what I'm saying? The WWE Network, whether it be DVDs, I have a bunch of DVDs. I got a lot of stuff that
right.
I've collected over the years. You know what I'm saying? I've been watching this, you know, this you know sport since I was 7 years old, and I'm, you know, I'm 30
right,
now. So I've, you know
right.
what I'm saying? And I don't understand the mentality of what this segment of the audience that they seem to not cater to. I just don't understand. I mean, you know, I ain't making it a race thing because I listen to all types of music. I mean, Steve knows what kind of music I listen to, and
yeah.
You know, I used to see you come out in the back in the day. You came out to, you know, China White with the Skyscrapers.
Right.
So you know what I'm talking about. And I see the white people in the audience, you know, they bobbing their heads to that song. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just saying, why is it that African-Americans aren't being pushed on the TV? That's my own problem. I'm seeing them been pushing in TNA. I see them getting pushed in Ring of Honor. But in the biggest sports entertainment company in the world, it ain't happening.
Well, the only thing I can tell you about that is that the people that are in charge are the people that are responsible for that. And that's all I can say.
Amen to that.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know why. I don't have the answer. I can't tell you why that they don't do this and, you know, for the blacks and don't do that. Because I don't know why. You know what I mean? I mean, there are some, like you said, Kofi's right there. You got Big E right there. You know, look at R-Truth. He's not, you know, he's entertaining. Lil Jimmy was great. You know, they took that away. So, brother, I just don't have any. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us about Booker T's group that you're being a general manager for right now? How's that going down in Texas right now?
Well, I'm basically not the general manager for his deal. Basically, he did his first live internet pay-per-view, and he had me to come in and just be general. Him and Shawn Miller just had me to come in and just be general manager for that night. So, but I haven't been back and did his deal since then. But I think it's great. I had a chance to look it over while I was there. He's got a lot of great young guys down there that are great workers. Man, that pay-per-view that night, that was a great show. And the thing that impressed me that these guys are young, green as they could be, never worked for the big time, none of them in their life. And they had a hardcore match there, I believe, and something went wrong with the table. The table broke on them before it was supposed to. So whoever gimmicked it, you know, I guess it might have been too much. But anyway, make a long story short, the table broke. Now, I'm looking at the monitor, and I'm watching these two guys, and I'm saying, oh, my God, what are they going to do? You know, because I'm thinking they're green, you know, how are they going to make up for this? So one guy was able to think about it, and he thought about it, and while that table was broke, he picked the broke pieces up, and he drug that table into the corner. And then he went back and got his opponent, and he picked him up and speared him right into that table. When he did that, people forgot all about that table that broke. They just like, holy shit, you know, because they never seen nothing like that. So that took their minds off of that. So what I'm saying is these guys were young and green enough to even to be able to think of something to do on live TV that would cover up their mistake. And I thought that was impressive to me because these guys never worked for no big time. Nobody was in there to talk to them and tell them what to do. They was able to think of that on their own. So I think Booker's operation is going to be great. I think it's going to take off. And I think he's doing the right thing. He has great equipment. He has a lot of, you know, the stuff, you know, not all the big time stuff like Vince has, but he's there. He's got the stuff to make it work. And he's working real hard for it, and I think it's going to be a success.
You know, Teddy, earlier this year we had a WWE Network special on Vicky Guerrero. And, of course, she, the widow of Eddie Guerrero, she did a great job as the general manager on Raw and SmackDown. They gave her due. Where is the Teddy Long special? Where is the best of Teddy Long? I mean, you've been in this business for about 30 years now. You've done everything. You're a referee, you're a manager, general manager, great promos. Where is the acknowledgement of Teddy Long's career? Where is the Teddy Long special?
Well, I can't answer for you. I you know what I mean? Like I said, anything like that, it's left up to the people in charge. They know it. They know I'm not here. You know what I mean? So if they don't want to do something, you know, it's on them. So, like I said, man, I don't even worry about it no more. I really don't.
You know, it's really a shame, too, that, you
know. Yeah, it is. It is. But you can't harp on it. You know what I mean? You can't worry about it. Because I've been dealing with this type of thing ever since I've been in wrestling. You know, you get out front, kick you right back to the back. So, you know, like I said, it don't worry about me. I'm just glad to be out and up there.
And I guess that'll lead to my final question I got for you. You've been in the wrestling business 30 years. You've seen it all. What do you want people to remember when they think of Theodore R. Long?
Well, I just want them to remember, you know, the joy and the entertainment that I gave them over the years. And I just want the people to know that I appreciate every living wrestling fan that's out there today, because without them, there would be no Teddy Long. They had to accept me. They had to make me become the person that I am. Because when I went out and I found out about what the business was all about, I went out and my thing was, once I walked out, my thing was, can I control this crowd? Can I get these people in the palm of my hand? And I was able to do that. And for me to be able to do that and for them to respond to me, that told me that they liked me. I met a lot of people at the Legends, you know, that came up to me. They didn't have to come up to me and tell me that they missed me or they, man, why ain't you not back on SmackDown? Man, what, you know, SmackDown ain't there without you. So they don't have no reason to lie about that, you know. So I just appreciate knowing the joy and entertainment that I could put in the people's lives that watch me on TV every day. And I just want them to remember, hey, I love y'all, and, man, thank you for everything.
Well, thank you for everything.
There's something going to happen for me. I'm going to come back. You're going to see Teddy Long doing something else.
Well, hopefully you will, man.
Well, the obvious question then is the Hall of Fame, and, you know, as you said, you don't know who's going to get in it, and I guess Triple H considers you a dinosaur, yet it's time for you to get your dues. If it's not this coming year, the following year, do you kind of expect that phone call? I mean, when you reflect on your career, they can't keep you out. I mean, you've just done too much in this business for them to keep you out. I mean, do you kind of expect that phone call now or in the future?
Oh, believe me, they can keep you out. Okay? They can keep you out. Believe me. No, I don't expect to get that call. No, I don't.
Well, you know what? That's a bunch of BS right there to me. Because if there's anybody that deserves to be in the WWE Hall of Fame, and I'm gonna tell you the truth, honestly, tell you, I'm not gonna kiss your ass because you're on the line. I'm telling you like it is. On this one, if there's anybody that deserves to be in the WWE Hall of Fame, you deserve to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. If we got Coco Beware, and I ain't knocking him, but if we got Coco Beware in the Hall of Fame,
if
we got Donald Trump in the Hall of Fame, then just like Randy Savage, we deserve to have Theodore R. Long in the Hall of Fame. Bottom line, you get back in history. Hey, man, you managed Dan Spivey, you managed Sid Vicious, and you managed Mean Mark, who later became The Undertaker. You managed Ron Simmons. Come on, man.
Right. And let me say something about this, man. You know, I may even turn them down, you know, because I know if they did do that, they're just doing it just for, it's just, you know, maybe they feel like, well, they make a few dollars off of me. You know what I mean? I think that would be the only reason that they would do it. Not because I deserved it or that they care anything about me. I think the only way they would do it is there's some way they're going to sell some video or some way they can make a few dollars off of me. That's the only reason I think they would do it.
Teddy, if they call you, I hope you do it for your fans, because I think your fans deserve to see you inducted in the Hall of Fame, you know, while you're still alive.
Right.
And still with us, and
right.
We love to hear you get that. I mean, we got the Ultimate Warrior this year. He got up there, he made his speech, and then he passed away. But at least we got to hear what he had to say. And I think as wrestling fans, as somebody that I've grown up watching you from the NWA days, that I would love to hear your speech. I'd love to hear your words, and I would hope that you would do it. I know, like Jesse Ventura did it for the fans. Paul Orndorff did it for the fans, not necessarily because of the politics, but he did it because the fans, deserved that moment, that you got a chance to get somebody get up there to talk about you and put you over, and then you get a chance to give your two cents on your great career. So I hope if they do call tomorrow or whenever that call comes, that you'll say, "I'll do it, playa," because I think we're entitled to that moment, and you justly deserve it.
Well, with that being said, and with you saying that to me, if they do call me, that's one thing I will remember, to do it for the fans. And that's the only reason I would do it, is do it for the fans. And I would do it for Vince. If Vince talked to me, if anybody else talked to me, I won't do it.
Well, that's fair enough to me.
If Vince wants me to be a part of that, then I'll do it.
In closing, Teddy, do you have any appearances coming up? How can potential promoters get in contact with you, and what do you got going on?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that to me. Yeah, I got some stuff coming up next month. I'm going to be up around Boston and Providence doing some stuff. But Brian Weinstein is the guy. I can't pull it up here on my phone, but he, I think you may have his information. If you could give that out for me, I know he's at Gmail, brianweinstein@gmail.com, I believe. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But if you have that information, if you could give that out for me, to where they could contact Brian and he'll get in touch with me, and brother, I'll show up live and in living color.
we'll definitely plug that. We put the press release out and mention it on Gerwick.net as well. And, Teddy, I appreciate the time today. I really appreciate your candor. This is a great interview. I appreciate you telling it like it is, because, Frank D and I come on and do this podcast, and we don't sugarcoat things, and we tell it like it is, and
right.
We touch on some controversial topics sometimes, and we just, it's our opinions, and I know you kept it.
There's nothing wrong with that, man. I mean, I enjoyed talking to you guys. Great interview, no problem, man, and anytime that you want me to come on and talk to you guys, I'll be happy to do it.
You'll definitely appreciate that. One more question for you, Teddy, right quick before we let you go. What's your opinion right now of the big controversy going on right now with Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson?
Well, let me say this. Here's one thing you got to understand. You can't put your hands on a woman. That's number one. This goes on, ain't no telling how many women are being affected with domestic violence inside the house that we don't know about. But, when you're not, the public eyesight like that, and you're a big star, big figure like that, there's just certain things you can't do. Back in the day, you probably could get away with this stuff. But right now, man, you got to be careful doing anything, man. People got cell phones everywhere.
Yep.
You might spit on the street, and somebody will take a picture of that, and the next thing you're on YouTube spitting on the street. So you got to be careful, man. I just feel bad for Brother Ray. I don't think his intentions were bad for him hitting his wife. During the heat of an argument or, drinking and stuff, things can happen. But, like I said, I think he knows and realizes that this is the biggest mistake he could have ever made in his life. And I think if he ever gets over this controversy, I'm pretty sure that this will never happen again. And so I just hope, the people will understand and forgive him and accept him back on the football field. And I hope he can continue his career. I mean, his wife was the victim and she's standing by him. So, I think we just got to let this thing go and give Ray another chance. On Adrian Peterson, certain way, like I say, you used to beat your kids back in the day. When I was a little kid, I had to go get my own switch. My mom made me go break it off the tree and bring it to her to get beat with.
Yeah.
I got whooped with ironing cords. Anything that she could find, to hit me with, that's what I got hit with. So, that worked back then, but now you can't do that. And it's kind of bad sometimes you can't discipline your kids, because some of your kids now, they need to be disciplined because they're acting like adults, you know, bringing guns to school and doing all kind of stupid stuff. So they need to be disciplined. But Adrian has to understand, too, you know, you're a public figure. You're a big star. There's certain things that you can't do. And he can't be beating on his kids and stuff like that, hurting them and harming them, because they're still kids. So I don't know how do you go about disciplining them without, you know, beating them. That you have to come up with another way, especially when you're a big name like him. But basically, I hope he learned his lesson. Don't put his hand on his kids anymore. Maybe find another way to discipline, and I discipline them, and I hope he can be able to make it back to the football field too.
Just to be clear, Teddy, are you on Facebook at all, or Twitter, social media?
No, I don't have any of that. I'm an impatient guy, and I just don't have. I just can't sit down and talk to folks like that.
Okay, so if there's a Teddy Long on Twitter, if there's a Teddy Long on Facebook, it's a fake. Just to be clear,
that's an imposter. That's not me.
Okay, I'm glad we clarified that.
Whoever's on Twitter and Facebook saying that you think you're talking to Teddy Long, no, you're not. You're not talking to me. I'm not on any of that.
Well, Teddy, we definitely appreciate your time today. This has been a great interview, and as you said, we'd love to do part two with you sometime. And Frank D and I wish you nothing but the best of luck in all future endeavors.
Well, I appreciate that too, man, and I wish you guys the best of luck in what you're doing. You've been around a long time, so that lets me know you're doing the right thing, because you're successful, and God has blessed you, and he's going to keep on blessing you, and he's going to do the same for me. And thank you once again for giving me the opportunity and giving me the time to talk to the fans, and especially give me the time to talk to you guys.